I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. Before we get started today, I have a quick announcement to make. If you've been listening to our advice segment, we would love to hear what you think of it. We put together a brief survey, which you can find at our website, outtherepodcast.com. It'll only take you about a minute to complete the survey, and it'll help us figure out whether to continue producing Dear Nature, and if so, what we should change about it. Also, to sweeten the deal a bit, if you complete the survey, we'll enter you into a drawing for some sweet Out There gear. Many of us think of science as something rigid, intellectual, unemotional. We consider beautiful sunsets to be art and bar graphs to be science. And we assume that there are two types of people in the world, the math and science people and the rest of us. But how true is that, really? Are we predestined to be one type or the other? Or is there more to the story? Today's episode takes us from the Oregon coast to a remote river in Idaho and takes a look at what we miss out on when we give up on science. Kayla Bordelon has the story.
I remember as a child lying face down on the rocks of the Oregon coast, blonde hair drifting on the surface of a tide pool. I brushed my finger against the tentacles of a purple anemone for the thrill of being briefly stuck, like a fly in a spider web. The anemone closed around my finger, transformed from this purple flower to a green lump as I pulled my finger loose, just in time. It was my mom who taught me to lie down like that, stomach scraping the barnacles and feet dangling into another tide pool. I watched, enamored by the secret comings and goings within a single pool, touching everything. I was 6 years old, and like all kids, insatiably curious about how the world worked. My mom knew the names of all the little critters, nudibranchs, chitons, limpets. She had an eye for detail. On hikes in the foothills of the Cascades, she stopped for every unremarkable black beetle, flipping them over to inspect them from all angles. My dad and my grandpa were both foresters, and they had the same instincts to observe, analyze, and identify. Family hikes were slow affairs, with Latin names mingling into conversation. Given my childhood curiosity and family background, you'd think that science would come easily to me, but it didn't quite work out that way. Fast forward to ninth grade science class. The periodic table is prominently displayed on the concrete wall, an indiscernible code of colors, letters, and subscripts. It's a foreign language that my classmates have mysteriously absorbed and now take pride in reciting like an alphabet. I've been doing my homework like everyone else, but it just doesn't make sense to me. I'm not like them. I can't read science. And more than that, I just don't care. The memorization of facts, the rigid procedures of our in-class labs, the classification of species into branching dichotomous keys, it's irrelevant to me. My former curiosity about the natural world is gone, pushed out by the dry helpings of data I'm forced to consume. My aversion to science in school seeped into my relationships with family as well. I have this distinct memory of twisting and wriggling to duck under my grandpa's elbow as he recited Latin names of trees at the kitchen table. He wanted to share the beauty of these words with me, but I felt incapable of understanding. I wanted to love science. I wanted to sit with my grandpa and be excited about distinguishing between serrated and undulating leaf margins. I wanted to be part of playing my family's favorite game, species identification. But I was useless at it. And I couldn't understand why everyone else thought science was so fun, so exciting. It was like they were all in on some secret that I would never be a part of. Over time, I built defenses against this feeling of inadequacy. I'd roll my eyes and fake a big yawn when my mom bent over some shiny little insect or nondescript green leaf in the trail. And in fact, I was so successful at blocking out anything too sciencey that somehow I managed to graduate from high school as a valedictorian without learning even the basic concepts of biology, chemistry, or physics. When I reached college, I defended my avoidance of the sciences. I told people, I just don't have that kind of brain. And I believed it. After a required one semester of science my freshman year, I swore I would never again set foot in the building that housed the science and math courses. My attention was on sociology and politics through the lens of social justice. I thrived in this world where the human experience was front and center and emotional responses had a place in the conversation. My family supported my path every step of the way, from undergrad to the Peace Corps in Central America to the years following my return. But through my 20s, I struggled to find satisfying work. That's because I really wanted a job that would combine my desire to be outside with a love of teaching that had blossomed during my Peace Corps service. And while I could pick up seasonal work as an outdoor educator, to truly teach outside as a career meant to teach the natural sciences. I was sure that no one wanted a science teacher who had dropped out of the sciences in ninth grade. I vacillated between jobs like building hiking trails and guiding trips. Then, after nearly a decade of struggling to find my place, something happened that changed everything. I was recertifying my wilderness first responder credentials at a 3-day course outside of Portland, Oregon. On the first day, over lunch, I gravitated towards a couple who drove a little gray truck with Idaho plates. Within 15 minutes, I recognized a kindred spirit in the woman. Like me, she had a background in the humanities, not science. After college, we had both been Peace Corps volunteers, working on land use and conservation issues. She was a few years older than me and had recently finished a Master's of Science in Natural Resources at the McCall Outdoor Science School. I recognized the place. This was the same little field campus of the University of Idaho where my grandpa took his whole family each summer while teaching forestry. My mom's name is etched into the dinner bell. My grandpa's irises still bloom along an old fence line. The parallels drew me in. This woman I had just met loved the research component of her graduate school experience so much that now she was studying climate change in the Arctic for NASA. I was dumbfounded. Wait, without a science background? You can do that? In my mind, the huge gap between my own capabilities and graduating with a master's in science seemed impossibly wide. But over an egg salad sandwich and Wheat Thins, she convinced me that the distance wasn't nearly as great as I thought. She told me that the faculty in McCall believed that we're all scientists because we all have the capacity to ask questions. In this program, graduate students take classes in place-based ecology, education, and science communication while simultaneously teaching natural sciences to visiting schools. Everything happens outdoors, with no lectures, no textbooks, no memorization. It sounded perfect, practical, hands-on, and down to earth. I didn't know it then, but I was about to unlock something inside myself that would change my life. A year later, I unpacked my Subaru into a small yurt surrounded by huckleberry bushes at the McCall Outdoor Science School. My self-doubt was in full bloom. It was a sleepless first night as I imagined how I'd be outed as an imposter and sent packing. The next morning by the campfire, we were asked to pick a tree cone off the ground. I desperately searched for a Douglas fir cone because that was the only one I was sure I could identify. No luck. At the last minute, I grabbed a pitchy pine cone and tried to blend into the background. But then, something surprising happened. We weren't asked to identify it. All we had to do was describe it. Brown? Gold? Spiky? Now, they said, go ahead and ask all the questions you have about your cone. And that was it. I breathed a sigh of relief. This I can do. Questions I have plenty of. That fall, I drank the Kool-Aid wholeheartedly, learning that science is less about having the right answers and more about asking questions. I found so much space in that discovery. It allowed me to follow my own curiosity wherever it led. It allowed me to use my emotions as a guide, directing me to ask questions of personal relevance. All of a sudden, this world that I felt like I couldn't be a part of was open to me. That childhood curiosity that I blocked out for so long started to bud and blossom. It was like waking up and seeing the beauty and mystery of the world with my 6-year-old eyes all over again. Those same little black beetles that I used to roll my eyes at made me stop, smile, and wonder. This wonder, all of these little beautiful surprises, these were science. I couldn't believe what I had been missing all along. As part of the graduate program, I started a teaching internship right away. My mostly sixth grade students and I used an exploratory approach. We generated questions together and gathered evidence in the surrounding woods with our five senses. I was weaving my way into the world of science through curiosity, and I strive to create the same pathways for my students. I wanted to counteract the perception that I had held for so long, that science is a collection of facts to memorize, a set of rules to follow. I wanted to be the teacher that kept them from bailing on science. And I was learning that the best way to do that was to show them a version of science infused with wonder. Unfortunately, this was easier said than done. Often, the moments that were most profoundly moving to me barely registered with my students. I remember an experience last spring. The ice had finally melted off the lake. The trilliums were in full bloom, and the smell of wild onions was everywhere. As we ate ham sandwiches at the edge of my favorite pond, a pair of sandhill cranes flew over us. massive extensions of necks and wings, those three-toed feet trailing awkwardly behind, and their scandalously loud trumpeting call. They set their wings and nearly crash-landed into the lily pads in front of us. I was taken with their bulk and wildness and their willingness to be close to us. Their arrival in our community meant spring was really on. With tears in my eyes, I looked to my students. They were eagerly engaged in trading pretzels for string cheese.
Hey, it's Willow. We'll get back to the story in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for Out There comes from Dish Outdoors, makers of the Tailgater Pro portable satellite antenna. The Tailgater Pro makes it possible to stay up to date on what's happening in the world while you're off on adventures. If you're like a lot of us, you're probably taking some time this summer to head outdoors. Maybe you're hitting the road in a van or an RV. Maybe you're heading out onto the water. Maybe you're hiding out in a cabin in the woods. Regardless, just because you're off the grid doesn't mean you have to miss out on the news or your favorite shows. Dish Tailgater Pro is a portable satellite antenna that lets you watch the things you love anywhere. It's rugged, weatherproof, and weighs just 8 pounds, so you can haul it around or mount it on top of your boat or RV and just forget about it. It doesn't need Wi-Fi to operate, you don't need to be a Dish subscriber at home to get Dish Outdoors, and you only pay for the months you use. Visit dishoutdoors.com to learn more and use the promo code PRO50 at checkout to get $50 off your Tailgater Pro and Dish Receiver bundle. That's dishoutdoors.com, promo code PRO50. And now, back to the story.
It was January 2017 when we realized that our school was near the path of totality for the solar eclipse. I wondered, could this be the ticket? Did this once-in-a-lifetime cosmic event have the power to spark a love for science in our students? I honestly didn't know the answer. But a small group of us got together and decided, let's give it our best shot. Throughout the winter and into the spring, we dreamed big and worked our butts off to design a program that would capture the hearts of our students. It was my chance to be the science teacher I never had, the one who could have stoked my sense of wonder and ignited my imagination. I was all in. This was the plan. We'd invite 40 awesome students who, because of ethnicity and income status, are underrepresented in the sciences. We'd spend 2 days at our mountain campus exploring their connection to the solar system. The grand finale would be the total solar eclipse. And to maximize the chances of having the science experience of a lifetime, we'd hire a rafting company to take us down the North Fork of the Payette River. There, we'd be far from the crowds and surrounded by nature. As August 21st approached, my stomach was in knots. The whole idea of pulling off a solar science program scared me to death. I was starting to feel comfortable with forest ecology, but astronomy was literally another galaxy altogether. I couldn't shake the self-doubt and feelings of inadequacy that had plagued me since high school. I wanted to be an inspiration to these students, to show them that everyone can practice science, but I worried that my own fears would get in the way.
Here's our next group, Armando.
Two nights before the big event, we set up a telescope and invited an astronomer to join us and geek out on the stars. We savored his knowledge and shared his excitement as this mysterious world came into focus. For most of us, it was our first real peek at the cosmos.
The star we're going to look at is called Alboreo. It's that star right there.
The next day, students took the mics and discussed their reactions.
What was your favorite constellation?
The chicken nugget.
My favorite thing was to watch the guy put the laser in the sky.
What did you like most about the telescope?
What I like most about the telescope was probably the two stars that looked like it was one, but there was actually two stars that were orbiting each other. I thought that was pretty cool.
What else did you think was pretty cool?
The laser.
I'm not sure if they were more excited about the stars or the laser pointer. And if the constellations in the night sky were overshadowed, I worry that the same could be true for the eclipse. In the days and hours before the event, students seemed way more excited to go rafting than they were to see the cosmic event of a lifetime. As they cinched life jackets over their swimsuits and excitedly chose which friends to share a raft with, I worried about the ability of the eclipse to resonate. Maybe rafting was a mistake. Too distracting. After only a half an hour on the river, the little grassy island where we planned to view the eclipse comes into view. As our 9 boats pull up to shore, I hear some groans from the students. What? That's it? I'm worried that we've got to the island too soon. The sun is still high in the sky, no signs of the eclipse. We try some games, but everyone is antsy. Either they're super stoked for the eclipse, or they're excited for it to be over so they can hit the rapids. But slowly, the moon starts to move in front of the sun. Students shiver in wet swimming gear as the 10 a.m. twilight takes on a magical and eerie quality. The horizons, both upstream and downstream, are like dual sunsets, and the river flows with a golden hue. I look around and realize that something has started to shift.
It looks so awesome.
It's so dark.
It like makes it's a like shadow. A no, but like it makes a shadow in your fingers.
20 minutes ago, it was so warm, like, and now like all of a sudden, like it came dark.
Oh, it's dark. Yeah, it's dark.
This is so cool. Like it got like 10.
Oh, there's a sunset over there.
Attention for just 1 second. We're gonna have an appetizer ready here in about 5 minutes, and then lunch will be ready in about 15 or 20 minutes. If you want to swim, you're welcome.
And just like that, it's over. Night to day, mystery to ordinary, disbelief to lunchtime. As our students excitedly recall every detail to each other, I tear up in amazement and relief. Yes, they got it. There's no doubt in my mind they were as spellbound as the rest of us. All of the instructors sensed it.
The kids just like fell over on each other gasping and they're like, oh my God. I think it's like, this sounds kind of hokey, right? But I think it's this shared moment of wonder that it's like, you could be by yourself and have a really profound experience, but you're surrounded by a bunch of kids, you know, and hearing their excitement and being a part of it. And I guess being at a stage in life where it's your role to help facilitate an experience like this, it's like profoundly, profoundly rewarding. Yeah.
You're so much more eloquent than me.
Shared moments of wonder. This is why I'm here. Because science is full of wonder. And because I almost missed out on a lifetime of these moments due to my own self-doubt. I keep thinking about the moon's trajectory across the sun and the life trajectories of my students. Did the eclipse offer something to my students that eluded me for so long? Was a moment like this powerful enough to build an emotional connection to science? Would it unlock doors for them to become the people they wanted to be? A few days later, I am finally able to listen to them interviewing each other after the event.
How did the eclipse make you feel?
It made me feel, I don't know, like a new person, I guess.
I think this will stay with me forever because it, like, as soon as I saw it, like, my heart just kind of, like, lit up.
Made me feel like I belong here. I have a purpose on this earth.
And there it is. A scientific phenomenon that carries the emotional power to renew a spirit, to light up a heart, to make us feel like we belong. No rules, no terminology, just pure wonder.
That was Kayla Bordelon. Currently, she's working as an interpretive ranger at Mount Rainier National Park, sharing the wonders of science with visitors. She's also pursuing a PhD at the University of Idaho, where she's exploring the intersection of storytelling and science. This is Kayla's first podcast story, and she wanted me to thank a few people for her. Teresa Cohn for giving her a microphone and saying, figure out how to use it, and Monica Goki for expert advice on how to actually make this happen. It's time now for Community Classifieds. Our classified section is a way for all of you to let each other know about events, books, products, etc., that you think the out there community would enjoy. Today's classified ad comes to us from Metolius Basin Institute, healing nature one person at a time through empowering you to let go of what no longer serves you and discover your own true purpose in life. The Institute specializes in transformational treks to Nepal, focusing on themes such as false summits and embracing masculinity in the modern world. They also offer nature-connected coaching sessions. To learn more, head to metoliusbasininstitute.com. That's M-E-T-O-L-I-U-S. BasinInstitute.com. If you'd like to take out a classified ad of your own, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click contact. There's a super easy form to fill out, and as soon as we hear from you, we'll be in touch about all the details. Thank you to Jim Hamilton and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. If the show is brightening your day at all, please consider making a gift of your own. We're an independent show on a shoestring budget. We do not have a network or a radio station supporting us, so we really do rely on your support to make this show. You can make a gift in any amount. Just head over to outtherepodcast.com and click support. Also, a quick reminder, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we've put together a brief survey about our advice segment, Dear Nature, and we would love for you to fill it out. It'll only take you a minute, and we will enter you into a drawing for some Out There gear. Again, that's at our website, outtherepodcast.com. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day. Be bold. go outside and find your dreams.